Blog Talk Radio.
Because it's time for Foul Territory. It tells me it's time. I'm like a Pavlov dog salivating for that sports talk. Today is Halloween, and it is super spooky outside, inside, on the airwaves, and everywhere. And we're bringing an extra scary, extra spooky episode of Foul Territory to you tonight from different ends of the country. My partner on the east side, Travis Jones. What's going on?
It's going great. I am jacked up on candy, been eating it all day, had some of those new Snickers filled with peanut butter for dinner. Quite delicious. I'm definitely ready to talk about some sports. It's going to be a spooky show, so I hope everyone brought their masks or whatnot. Get ready for a Halloween episode of Foul Territory.
Yeah, so I'm curious, if you had Snickers for dinner on Halloween, how does this work? Is dessert then savory, or is dessert just another level of candy madness?
Probably just another level of candy madness. I'm sure I'll crash about, you know, halfway during the show, sneak out, grab some more candy, and back it up with some Twix and Reese's, because that's what I think I have laying around.
Twix are the shit, yeah.
Underrated candy.
Say what?
I said it's an underrated candy.
It is, and it's actually easy to eat. A lot of candies are such a pain in the butt to eat, but a Twix, you kind of... you rip off the corner, you pop it out, and just take a little bite. Very useful. And because it's Halloween, you know, we'll talk a little bit about this holiday. It's one of the more fun holidays. At any point in your life, whether you're a little kid and candy's the primary focus, or you're a bit older and something else is the focus. But I just was wondering how your Halloween went over the weekend, because many of us grown people, as we like to call ourselves, celebrate, you know, when the weekend rolls around. So how was your Halloween weekend?
You know what? Thanks for asking. It was good. It was very spooky. Hosted a Halloween party at my house. At its height, we approached double digits in people, so it was really intense. I myself was dressed as Han Solo. The ball and chain was, of course, Princess Leia. And our dog was dressed uncomfortably as Yoda for most of the evening, and that was the best part for me. How about yourself?
That's excellent. Well, I attended a Halloween party myself as Dr. Andre Nozick from the popular FX show The Lead.
Nice.
It went over fairly well.
How many people actually got who you were?
I would say a fair amount, just because I knew that the people hosting the party were big fans, but the average person didn't know. But I really thought that through this year, and I figured, you know what? I would rather have about 25 to 30% of the people know what my costume is, and then those people appreciate it a lot, than just everybody say, oh, you're a ghost. Cool, you're a freaking ghost. So I went with the more specialized costume choice this year. And I think it paid dividends. It was hard to get a gap tooth, but I tried to improvise with a little black paper. And
yeah, absolutely. And speaking of niche costumes, of course, Asa and I famously were 2/3 of a portrayal of Birds of War from the It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia TV show. Fantastic costumes. Tore it up in Baltimore. So, yeah, Halloween, a fun time for any age.
Of all our costumes, those were some of the most epic and just well-executed. Although, poor choices for the level of freezingness that was outside. And speaking of that, when it gets cold outside, you usually think the sports seasons are a change in. But before we get into that whole thing about baseball ending, basketball starting, and all those other good things, let's get to one of our more whimsical segments of the evening, of the program. Child of Mouth.
She's got a smile that it seems to me reminds me of childhood memories, where everything was as fresh as a bright blue sky.
All right, Tommy, you're the oldest. I'm counting on you. Come on.
She's got eyes of the bluest skies as if they thought of rain. I hate to look into those eyes and day and night.
Nice vibrato, buddy. All right, Alice, let's go.
Oh, Alice, oh.
Enough of that, Alice. You will find your lover later. But right now, we got to get to the Twittosphere, where Travis and I both are just prolific. So what do you have for us from the giant world of Twitter this evening?
Well, you know, I'm always scouring the Twitterverse, trying to pick out the best of what's going on, trying to stay topical from week to week. What's more topical this week than Hurricane Sandy? Yes, a very sad thing that's happening. But Hurricane Sandy on Twitter tweeted, LOL, someone said they should rename me to A-Rod, because then I won't hit anything.
Yeah.
And I thought that was appropriate, considering the end of the baseball season.
It absolutely was appropriate, and considering that obviously the most damage was in that New York Yankees fan base area. Yeah, that's a good one. And I don't think that offends anyone. It's just a pretty clear portrayal, and, you know, obviously it wrecked some havoc, but I've talked to some people up there who I know, and, you know, luckily they're getting things turned around. But something that, you know, our part of the country more, the South, experiences almost every year. You know,
yeah, and I have a lot of family in Florida, and usually they're the ones on the brunt end of this thing. But it's good to see that everyone's recovering well, and, you know, it's going good. So
yeah, absolutely. And so I want to get to a tweet from Rob Delaney. And I don't think I need to tell you guys who he is at this point. And anyway, he's, as you probably know, if you don't know, he's a very liberal guy, except on one issue, you know, he's borderline fascist. And this tweet deals with that. Real talk, colon. If your Halloween plans include toking up a joint of marijuana, you can bet your night will end at the morgue. Hashtag 420 no. Rob Delaney, very strong stance on controlled substances. So an interesting man, a real combination of viewpoints and all of that jazz.
I just love when people call it a marijuana cigarette.
What did they call it in Malcolm X? Do they call it? I feel like they called it a reefer stick or something.
Reefer stick. I think you're right. Smoking reefer sticks in your zoot suits.
In your zoot suits. That's magical. Quick tangent, because I'm just thinking of this. The actor who plays Andre Nozick, his name I'm going to look up because...
Paul Scheer,
there it is. I started following him on Twitter, and through that discovered a podcast that he has with the actor who plays Rafi.
How Did This Get Made? One of my favorite podcasts.
There you go. Yeah, so I didn't even know this existed. And so the podcast, tell me if I'm getting this right, is basically every week or whenever they make it, they take a really, really... just unwatchably bad, so funny, so bad it's funny movie, and just really break it down. Like, they get into the nitty-gritty, they analyze the actual plot, you know, how bad everything was, the production value, and it just is really hilarious to listen to. And I heard the one about Pluto Nash, and it made me think of that because you said zoot suits, and apparently everybody in that movie was way in the future, but still wearing zoot suits on the moon. So that's my crazy brain at work for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I support that plug. That thing's hilarious. Jason Manzoukas and Paul Scheer are really funny. Also, June Dye and Rafal on the track. Yeah, they break down movies like Battlefield Earth that I would never watch, and now I feel like I've seen them. So, good plug.
Exactly.
I like that the podcast sphere is self-supporting. But what do you say we get into the end of the baseball season?
Let's do it. And I'll just get us started because the parade.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't fact you're out at the old ball game.
That intro song, of course, voted creepiest intro song of the year, so we had to bring it back for Halloween.
We had to, and it does kind of sound ghastly, like four dead guys in a barbershop quartet that just really aren't that into it. But we're that into it, although unfortunately the MLB season is now interred.
Aww.
And it's history now. And what you remember from history is who won at the end of the year. That's really what matters, especially in baseball. You know, the San Francisco Giants, could this be the makings of a dynasty? I mean, this is their second win in 3 years. I hate to throw that word around because it's really thrown around. And on the surface, they don't, you know, they don't have the juggernaut feel. They don't. They really don't. But they have proved that they get into the playoffs, they're going to win that division. And once they get into the playoffs, they can make shit happen. It was an incredible performance. They swept the Tigers. I mean, what did you think about that?
Well, I mean, I just, you know what? I think it's a little bit early to throw around a word like dynasty when they didn't even make the playoffs last year. But winning the World Series 2 out of 3 years, I mean, give credit to the front office. Regardless of the high-profile Carlos Beltran move, they've had a lot of moves that have gone right. Brian Sabian's done a good job. I mean, picking up Marco Scudero obviously paid huge dividends, you know, over the course of the postseason. Hunter Pence helped supply some offense. And one thing that helps them going forward is that abundance of pitching. You know, like the Atlanta Braves that we love, they have a strong bullpen. They have one of the elite starting fives in the league. And, you know, they've done a good job of collecting talent. And just like the St. Louis Cardinals have shown, if you can keep doing that, you can put yourself in contention just about every year.
Yeah. And the other way to phrase that, you know, you did say they didn't make the playoffs last year. The other way to phrase that is that every year that Buster Posey has been the starting catcher for the Giants, they've won the World Series.
That's true.
Which is obviously a beautiful manipulation of words. But, you know, the bottom line is they have more offense than they used to. They just do. And if Lincecum bounces back, which he will, I'm thoroughly convinced that he's not as bad as he was this year. He's never going to be Cy Young caliber. He might just barely be average. But even that is so big because Vogelsong is nasty. He really is. He's a guy who's at a late career revival, you know, really a late bloomer, struggled to get up to the big leagues at all, but has stuck now. And Bumgarner and Kane at the top of that rotation.
Yeah, Kane's a bona fide ace. I mean, he's a guy who threw a no-hitter this year. And he's had huge success in the playoffs.
Perfect Kane. The first game. San Francisco Giants history.
Yeah.
So they get their love, but now it's on to the off season, and lots of stuff happens really quickly because these first few days after the off season, teams have to make decisions on options that they hold. Players have to make decisions on options, which basically means, you know, a contract can be guaranteed for up to, you know, any number of years. Really, we've seen guys sign 10-year guaranteed deals, but you could also have a guaranteed deal with an option on the end, which means after the end of the guaranteed years, if it's a player option, the player can decide whether they want to take that deal for the next year, and the team option, the team can do that. So that's a big thing that's gone on. There have been some trades. We obviously talked about the Chris Young trade last week. That was really eye-catching for how quickly it went down. But why don't we start off with the Atlanta Braves, first alphabetically and first in our hearts.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Braves re-signed three big pieces. Tim Hudson, the veteran pitcher. Brian McCann, who had a rough year but still comes back at a pretty affordable price with a player option this year. And then Paul Mahalam, who's an absolute steal, a solid lefty, is going to be a big part of this rotation. So for a pretty affordable price, the Braves are retaining three big pieces. You know, this is something that we in Foul Territory predicted, of course, that these guys were going to stick around. And it solidifies the Braves in a lot of positions, you know, but there are a few holes.
Yeah. I like all these decisions. you know, we did predict these, but I don't think they were all slam dunks necessarily. I mean, Mahalem is definitely a steal at 6.5, and the other two guys have a serious history with the team, so that counts for a lot. But we talked about maybe McCann would work out a different deal. He's an interesting case. He's probably not going to be back for the beginning of the year. He's going to miss a little bit of the year, which, you know, with injuries could always turn into May or June. You never know, especially with a guy, you know, who's been a catcher for so long. And, you know, we needed him around. We definitely need him to be our starter, and I believe he's much better than a 230 hitter now that he's had his surgery and hopefully be fully recovered. You know, however, there has been a steep decline, you know, and the other side of it is the last time he took an extension, he took a very team-friendly deal. So I think at this point, he feels like he needs to get some money. Probably he would get a good deal in free agency, probably from an American League team where he could play some DH. But it's interesting because now we have him for 1 year. So at the end of the year, we're either going to extend him during the year. If he really bounces back, I would assume we would do that. Or if he struggles, who knows? Maybe we let him hit free agency after that. It's weird to think about, but...
Yeah, you know. It is an interesting situation because you want him to do well because obviously you want the team to succeed. But if he does have an excellent year, then he may price himself out of your range if he doesn't want to take that team-friendly option. But then again, you don't necessarily want him to play bad in the interval to afford him because in the National League, you don't want to spend a ton of money on a catcher, especially when the Braves have proven in the past that they're pretty good at developing catchers, and they have some fairly good prospects in the minors right now. So that'll definitely be something to watch next year. But I think that definitely one of the things that the Braves are going to have to look at this year, obviously we have McCann now at catcher, Freddie Freeman at first base, moving Martin Prado to third, Dan Uggla will hopefully hit 200 at second. Angleton playing well in at shortstop last year, and then Hayward in right field. But now we need to look towards the outfield. Any ideas about what might be going down in this offseason for the Braves outfield?
I mean, it's fun to speculate. I can't lie. I love the season, but I think I love the offseason even more. As a nerdy baseball fan.
It's roster baiting all day.
It is just complete roster baiting, and building a baseball team is such an art. You know, building a winning team, all the different components you have to have from building a bullpen. You know, and the Braves are blessed right now. They have pitching depth, like we talked about, and the bullpen and the rotation. So we're mostly going after a left fielder and a center fielder. Tell me if I'm wrong. Assuming we don't get Michael Bourne, no one in our organization right now could start in left or center, correct?
Yeah, there's absolutely a dearth of outfield talent in the minor leagues.
Nobody. Not next year, maybe not, probably not even the year after. So, you know, we have the
newly... The Braves are so intent on developing pitching that there really isn't a whole bunch of offense right now.
Yeah, and we talked about this before. The Braves in recent drafts with their high picks often focus on polished college pitchers that are close to major league ready, guys with low ceilings. They don't often go after those high school athletes who are usually the sick outfielders, you know, the guys who end up having gaudy power numbers. But, you know, that's something you can acquire on the market, whether it's through trade or through free agency. We talked a little bit about trade in weeks past. Let's talk about free agency. Here's a name I want to float around, Angel Pagan. Now, this guy has been really solid and really put on his semi-Superman cape for the Giants this year. I mean, before he was in the leadoff spot, their offense was putrid. They were starting Gregor Blanco there. Ryan Terrio was hitting second. It was just a total joke. And I was saying this all summer to my roommate. You can freaking ask him, but he probably doesn't remember. You need to put Pagan in the starting role, or in the leadoff role, excuse me. You know, he's a guy who gets on base, not at an incredible rate. He had a 338 on base percentage, but that's pretty good for a center fielder these days. And this year, you know, 8 home runs, 15 triples, 38 doubles. Obviously won't have that triple alley if he was in Atlanta. but he's a very capable hitter, stole 27 bases. Maybe not the guy you want hitting leadoff, but could do it, and has been a pretty good fielder, pretty highly regarded fielder throughout his career. Baseball Reference over the last 2 years has said he's basically average. I don't know. The eye test to me makes him look pretty good. But, you know, he's a guy who might be able to be had for not big money. He's a guy who might be affordable. There's so many other good center fielder types that the team's bidding on them. You know, he might slip through the cracks a little bit. You'd think the Giants would want to re-sign him too, which means they'll probably outbid us, unfortunately. But he'd be an interesting guy to go after. Maybe would only command, you know, I don't know, $7-8 million a year.
Yeah, so. I was going to say eight. I think eight's a good number for him. I'm not exactly sure what the market would dictate for him right now. But, yeah, I agree with everything that you said. I mean, he is a guy that gets on base. Obviously, he's more than just, you know, a slasher who relies on speed, because he had a fair amount of extra base hit last year. And you know what? He's been doing it for a few years, too. I mean, it's easy, you know, despite the media market, to get lost with the New York Mets. And he put up some solid seasons. The thing about the Braves is, you know, kind of like the Giants in the way they go about constructing their roster, they don't have, you know, one or two superstars like the Tigers do. So they have to make sure that lineup, top to bottom, you're getting quality at-bats, 1 through 8. And Angel Pagan is a guy that can definitely grind out an at-bat, you know, get on base, hit for some pop. And you know, like you said, he had 27 steals last year or something like that. So he's also a threat on the base paths and can play good defense. You're right. I think he's a guy that would perfectly profile for the Braves. One guy that we've heard about in the past, you know, possibly being a trade option for the Braves was Ryan Ludwig, who really had a really solid year last year. Do you think he might be a possible fit for Atlanta?
I would hope so. You know, he's a guy who's having kind of, a lot of late career success. He probably benefited a lot this year from being, you know, not playing full time in that Reds lineup, facing a lot more lefties. But this year had 26 homers and 80 RBIs in only 422 at bats.
Wow.
That's not many at bats. So a full time that projects to over 30 home runs. A 346 on base is really good. So even a bit of regression from last season still leaves him at a 500 slugging.
In that park, I think power numbers can be deceptive, but it is nice to see that high on base percentage.
And he's a right-handed bat. That's the thing. The Braves are really going to need that going forward. With Chipper Jones retiring, it's weird to say it, but you got to think the middle of that lineup is Hayward Freeman, which is okay, but you know, you're going to need a righty in there somewhere, ideally. So left-handed starters can't shut you down like they've been doing. You know, can't have that. So he's 34. He's getting up there. It's been said that both he and the Reds have mutual interests, so likely they will get first crack at it. I mean, I think technically they do get first crack at it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, probably they have a good chance to sign him, but who knows? You know, you think the Braves would have a little bit of money to throw around. Now, I did some calculations. This is a very rough estimate. Very rough. It involved a little bit of rounding, a little bit of estimating, but also the calculator on my computer. So I added together the guaranteed contracts for next year, which now include the three options that were picked up, Dan Uggla and some other small ones, and that amounts to $42 million. So then we have arbitration-eligible players, which all get raises. So guys like Hayward and Venters are going to get more money because they're not on the minimum anymore. So the money is determined by their performance. So those numbers have been estimated by Matt Swartz at MLB Trade Rumors. His estimates have been like 90% accurate the last 3 years. So it's pretty reliable. So those panned out to be $26 million in total. So that like Martin Prado will probably get as much as $8 million next year. He's predicted for a $7.7 million salary.
That's a good number for Martin Prado.
It is. It is, you know, so the arbitration process, it really rewards performance. And I added all those up without Jurgens, because I assume that he will be non-tendered by the Braves. He's expected to make as much as $5 million, even though he sucks. just because he's been in the big leagues this long. So all that added up is $68 million. So that's $68 million. That's really not a lot. The last few years we've been right at 90, which is not a ton. But if you figure that's not our full roster, that doesn't include the minimum salary guys who all make about $500,000. So I guess add a couple million for however many of those guys. But so you're still around 70. In theory, you have about $20 million of wiggle room, assuming we can maintain the same salary and they're not actually trying to cut on us. That's a little bit of money to throw around. You know, you're the Braves. You're going to be smart. You're going to be cautious with it. But, hey, if you could spend it in the right way, go get it.
Yeah, and I mean, like we said, there's really not that many holes. I mean, you know, the bullpen's cheap and good. We pretty much have the rotation together. And we have a solid lineup stapled down at this point of, you know, a lot of young guys that don't cost a lot. We finally got some contracts off the books. Chipper was a lot of money. That Derek Lowe contract, we just got about $10 million off. So, you know, Atlanta probably won't make any splashy moves, but it is nice to think about.
What about Josh Hamilton?
Oh, man, don't get me started on Josh Hamilton.
I was thinking about that the other day, and I think I actually wouldn't even want him. Like, he's so talented, but it's just like he goes so ice cold, and you just can't have that. Like, I don't know how you can have your guy be a guy who gets that cold.
Yeah,
we already tried
that in a lesser form in Dan Uggla, and it really, really burned us. Because, you know, what if he's not hot at the right time? And also, how long of a contract? You know, he's going to demand a pretty long contract because, you know, there's a huge market for him. He's a great player.
Oh, for sure.
That's not something that I'm really comfortable
with.
That's
a total pipe dream. But not even a – it's a pipe nightmare, actually. It's a pipe mare. Well, we love the Braves, but moving on to the Braves' former director of scouting, I believe, Dayton Moore, over with the Royals. The Royals are getting a little frisky. They're making some moves. They acquired Irvin Santana from the Angels, who had a piss-poor year. And the Angels, that vaunted team who I picked to win the goddamn World Series, Ron Calhoun's team.
To be fair, I put you on the spot for that decision.
Lane Bell didn't even make the play, although they had more wins than the Tigers, so let's give him credit there. But anyway, have a pretty damn good-looking rotation in place already with a chance to add more to it if they can re-sign Grinke. But they're really unhappy with Santana. He was brutal last year. He allowed 39 home runs, which is the most in the majors, in only 178 innings. That's 2 per 9. That's a crazy rate. So, you know, he had multiple home runs in almost every start. That's insane. You know, still, in his career, he's been a pretty solid pitcher. He's been able to get strikeouts. And when healthy, he can really eat some innings up in the 220 range in years past. And that's valuable. So the Royals are banking on that. So what happened was, this is like a sign and trade in baseball, kind of, which you don't really hear about. The Angels exercised their option, which was $12 million, sent him to the Royals. They picked up the tab for $1 million, so the Royals are paying him $11 million, and they got kind of a fringy prospect reliever guy. So essentially a dump, essentially a move that the Royals were thinking, we won't be able to get a better deal on the free agent market. So let's do this. We're still out of contention, and he's good. I'm sure they'll flip him at the deadline.
Yeah, it feels like a smaller market move, and it is a smaller market move. And, you know, honestly, it's a good deal for them. Like you said, they're not going to really attract any free agents, and it's not really like they have the money to spend, even if people would want to go there. So, keep trying to develop that young talent. You get a guy that can come in there, eat some innings. He's had success in the past. You know, maybe he'll pan out for the Royals in the future. I'm certainly hoping for all of those Uber prospects to gel. Speaking of Uber prospects, one guy who was really good that came out of the system is Joaquin Soria, the Mexicutioner, and it looks like he might be on his way out of Kansas City.
Yeah, it looks like he is, and he actually doesn't want to be called that anymore, which sucks, because I guess he decided that with the gang violence going on down there, it was inappropriate. But yeah, the Royals
such
had
a nickname. That's unfortunate.
It is. So he went down. He missed this whole season, if that's where you're wondering where he was. And the Royals had an $8 million option on him for this year, which is pretty decent for a very good closer. But with the injury, they're not going to pick it up. Instead, he gets, I think, like a $500,000 buyout. And I like to call instances like this a small market fail. I'm calling you out, Dayton Moore, because you failed. And you're a small market team. You can't pull moves like this. Soria had a lot of trade value before the injury. I mean, it sucks. You don't want to trade a guy and have him immediately get injured because then that hurts your credibility. But assuming they didn't know, you know, he was highly touted. He was one of the best closers in the league, actually. And they could have gotten serious prospects for him a couple of years ago or even last offseason. Didn't pull the trigger. Now they're left for nothing. Not even going to, you know, nothing. Just he's gone. They don't get a draft pick because the system changed. So.
Yeah, it sounds like one of those, you know, NBA deals where now, you know, if you're going to lose somebody, you might as well try to get value for them. You got to be smart when you're building for your future.
Yeah, for sure. And so he was, you know, he was saving games for a last place team. Good investment.
Yeah.
But, you know, if he's back and he's healthy, could be a good signing for another team looking to bolster its bullpen. You know, the Dodgers like to throw around money. Speaking of bet. Jesus Christ.
Ugh.
All right. This is the last transaction we got. I wasn't even going to get to this one, but the Dodgers gave Brandon League 3 years, $22.5 million. We already know not to sign closers to deals like this, especially not closers whose underlying peripheral stats make them look worse than Rosie O'Donnell on the mound. this deal with a vesting option could be worth as much as $31.5 million. You could be paying that to Brandon Lee. This year, he was just so lucky. He had a 3.13 ERA, but he allowed only 2.1% of his fly balls were home runs. That rate in the majors is usually up closer to 10. So he was disproportionately lucky and just super lucky. And once those home runs start going out, that ERA is going to skyrocket. He is going to be a mess of a closer, and then he's not going to be a closer. You wonder if this move was made considering Kenley Jansen's heart issues. I hope he's okay. He was a beast for my fantasy team when he was well. Get well, Kenley.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, this is just, you know, all offseason I've been saying, and even during the season when the Dodgers made all of those moves for, you know, so many big-name, high-dollar guys that – just because you all of a sudden find yourself with a bunch of money doesn't mean you should just throw it around. You know, the collapse by Boston has shown us you have to be smart with where you're investing your money. You have to make the right investments if you want them to pay off. It's all well and good that you can bring this guy in, but should you for that price? That's what they need to be asking themselves. And, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, you know, his peripheral stats show that he might regress. Had a pretty good last 2 years, but also pitching in Seattle, you know, that definitely helps as well. So,
true story.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, baseball offseason has been fun, but let's get to the association, which just started last night. Do we have an NBA song, or are we just going to roll on?
Oh, you know what? We did. I don't even know what it is, because it was from, like, our first few episodes. Let's see what the
I'm
going to
click it. Click it. All right. Bad night. I like that.
Something like that. Yeah, NBA is back. It snuck up on us, but the ending of the World Series synced up perfectly with the beginning of the old Leather Pumpkin League.
The old Leather Pumpkin League. The old League of Baskets. And there was some crazy shit that went down this weekend. I saw it on Twitter at the Halloween party, I believe, that I was at, and didn't quite believe my eyes. I thought it was a prank. I really thought it was a prank. And what I'm referring to, of course, is the spooky, terrifying mystery of the great James Harden incident.
Bum, bum, bum.
Abducted to Houston. What the fuck? We don't use that word a lot, but I use it with purpose. This is a situation that requires it. What happened?
Well, I think it was appropriate this happened right before Halloween because, no offense, Houston, but that is a pretty hellish industrial city. It's crazy. You were looking at an Oklahoma City team that, you know, had a core together that had been young and growing together for the past few years, that was on the cusp of going, winning the final, not on the cusp of winning the finals, but made it to the finals last year. Had one of, you know, the three best teams in the league between them and the Heat and potentially the Lakers with the all-star lineup that they have. And then all of a sudden they take their young scorer and trade him to Houston, thinking that in the future, you know, he may be a bit too expensive for them. But it really came out of nowhere, took a lot of people by surprise. I'm with you, WTF.
Yeah, I mean, The debate was over, I think it was like 4 or 7 million. I don't know what the exact numbers were, but
by the way, James Harden signed a fat contract today. I think it was an $80 million contract.
Yeah,
the
he got the max. He got the max from Houston, so he did get. I mean, he got paid. He got paid, which is what he's looking for, clearly, which is okay. Okay, that's what you're looking for, but I don't know. I mean, that team. Such an unorthodox team, such a crazy team, playing in the playoffs, small lineup, which, you know, obviously is the way now because you have to beat the Heat. So you have to play small ball. That they've changed the league completely. You know, the centers are going to be almost non-existent unless you have a really dominant defensive center. But, you know, they had that core in it and it just fit together. And Harden was just that calming factor. He really brought a lot to the table. He could penetrate so well, so good off the pass, and could handle the ball with the second unit. Really brought a spark off the bench. And he had talked before about how he didn't mind being the third fiddle, second fiddle guy. But I guess from how it seems like he was insulted that they wouldn't give him the max amount of money they would give him. And just said, fuck it, you're playing hardball, I'm playing hardball, I'm going to go get paid.
Yeah, absolutely. And, it's kind of crazy. And, there are lots of different perspectives that you can take from this. You know, there's this perspective of the Oklahoma City fan, and that's kind of, it's crazy that you wouldn't want to win all these championships because – you know, the nature of the NBA today seems to be that all of these superstars are teaming together. So why would you want to break apart from a nucleus that you already have that's proven to be a good equation? One perspective which just kind of popped into my head, which I'm going to talk about for a second here, is from the Houston Rockets perspective, you know, it's got to be exciting to get a guy like, you know, Harden in there who is an all-star. He played on the Olympic team. He went to the finals last year. But they're paying him a lot of money. You know, he's not the biggest guy. He's a pretty good scorer, but he hasn't, you know, been in a position where he's had to put a team on his back. Now you have a ton of money invested on James Harden and Jeremy Lin, who, you know, took us on the Linsanity run of last year, which was extremely entertaining, but it has looked a little bit rough this year. That's a lot of money on two small guards when you're building your team moving forward.
Yeah, it is. And that's the other side. Like, I feel like Harden, probably when he came up, he wasn't that celebrated. They took him high, but he was like a guy that people kind of were like, really, you took him third? But he, you know, maybe he isn't that guy. You know, I don't know if he is that number one scorer, that number one, you know, 38 minutes a game, you know, 36 minutes a game option. I don't know if he's that. I mean, he's definitely talented, and I feel like he's got such an ability in the lane. He's, you know, he's a different level of shooting guard. Like, he's got he's got a really multifaceted offensive game. But you're right, he is a little small, and maybe they think they still have Pau Gasol from that phantom trade that never happened, because that would be a nice score right there. But
yeah, that would be a good lineup, but I mean, if you look at the Rockets as constructed, I realize that they're still in transition, but I mean, Jeremy Lin and James Harden, that's all fine and good at, you know, point guard and shooting guard, but Patrick Patterson, power forward, Omar Asik at center, and Chandler Parsons at small forward. They might be able to play some defense, but, you know, they might have some trouble. So it's just a nice move for Houston, but, you know, still some room to go.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't know. I mean, if you're OKC, I don't know why you don't just pony up that money and pay him, for Christ's sake. I mean, this is your chance. The Heat are incredible. But, you know, a year older, a couple years older, you bring along some guys, you can challenge them the next few years. You have the talent. You really do, because Wade is great still, but he's, you know, he's on the decline. Your guys are coming into their own. Durant is unbelievable, dude. I mean, that he is just unreal. And they're so good on defense combined, because they're all so fucking long, and they just cover so much space.
Yeah, and once Westbrook learns to play within himself, I mean, he is maybe the most athletic person pound for pound in the NBA. It's insane.
Yeah. It's the best duo that I could imagine. Like, they're the best duo, and then with him, they were far and away the best trio. Like, everybody loved that team. Like, you couldn't help but love that team. And, oh, man, I mean, people say they stole up from Seattle. Whatever. Good for them.
Yeah, Seattle didn't want him, so.
Although, you think Seattle might spring for the extra few million and keep James Harden. But I guess not. So this has some ramifications around the whole NBA. Some spooky ramifications.
Scary, creepy ramifications.
We should have werewolf bar mitzvah blaring.
We had that on the loop at the party.
Oh, for sure?
Oh, yeah.
Well, what's also awesome, and I don't mean the hackneyed awesome, I mean the actual dictionary definition of awesome, of awe-inspiring, is the lineup that the Lakers are trotting out right now. And, you know, they lost last night. It's not going to look pretty. It takes time to develop chemistry. But just, like, thinking about it from a video game fantasy perspective, like, just the star power, the Hall of Fame credentials of that lineup, it's so incredible. You know, of all the star-studded Lakers lineups, I don't know. This one might take the cake.
Yeah, the thing is, I mean, you think of the last star-studded lineup, and that was when Karl Malone and Gary Payton joined at the end of their career to kind of mishmash with Kobe and Shaq to try to win a title as a last grasp. But right now you're looking at, okay, Steve Nash, he's on the decline, but you know, he is still an incredibly elite point guard who specializes in getting the ball and distributing the ball. You have Kobe, who is, you know, is still a very, very capable superstar. But you have young Dwight Howard all of a sudden, who is in his prime and the most dominant center in the league. You have Pau Gasol, who's in his prime. You have a lot of guys who are just absolutely dominant, and the potential that's there if they can get that chemistry together. I mean, they're going to have a mismatch at every position, and it's downright scary.
I know. People they're just going to have to be unselfish, which you know, sounds hard for guys like Kobe, but easy for guys like Nash. I mean, I feel like Dwight is going to get very few plays called for him. You know? I mean, just
yeah,
by the
Dwight's going to have a lot of putback dunks and probably little else.
Yeah, and alley-oops, because Nash is a pimp. But, like, Dwight,
but with him and Kobe playing defense on the same team, and with Gasol and Meta Peace, you can forget, you know, Nash's defensive liabilities.
Right, exactly. Dwight, yeah, he covers for them. And yeah, Gasol's still a seven-footer. He's not known for great D, but if it's him and Dwight in there, Twin Tower style, like, yeah, you're not getting inside on them. You got to think they're, you know, I don't know about Mike Brown. We'll see. This is like a big test, you know, to try to gel this many. I mean, you're already the Lakers coach. You know that to a certain degree. But adding in Nash and Dwight at the same time, that's a big test, I feel like, for a coach. I think they have other, like, former greats on their coaching staff, I'm sure. It's a classic Laker move. But
yeah, I'm sure Jerry Buss is a calming influence, but it is kind of crazy. You know, last year, absolutely, Kobe's the man, and then all of a sudden you bring in a former two-time MVP and, you know, a guy who's probably looked at being, you know, one of the cornerstones of the franchise in the future. And, you know, that is a lot of personalities to mesh, and Phil Jackson was the Zen master. You know, Mike Brown seems to be the overanalyzer, so hopefully he can analyze himself, you know, through that situation.
Mike Brown. I feel like he's a middle school social studies teacher. I'm Mike Brown.
You damn kids would just pay attention. I teach you things.
Sit down, Steve Nash. Stop playing with that basketball like the soccer ball.
Meta piece. I swear to God.
Like you said, there's a lot of personalities there. I mean, Gasol has had his fits, although I think he could benefit a lot on offense because it would just be space. He'll get to play from the high post and have Nash dishing to him. He's got great hands. He'll be able to catch those passes and get layups. But, you know, definitely like a lot of shit going on. And Meta World Peace is the fifth guy in that lineup, lest we forget. He does bring a lot on defense. You know, tactically, he's a nice guy to have in there because he's got size, he's got strength. But in terms of the chemistry, there's so much going on right there. I don't know how they're not filming that season, doing a reality show type thing. Maybe they are under the table. But, yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how they develop. I think they'll probably be the favorite in the West at this point with Harden off OKC. I definitely think they'll be considered the favorite, you know, assuming they figure out how to win regular season games.
Absolutely. Talking about them as the favorites, do you want to go ahead and get into some preseason predictions, or do you want to analyze a little bit more about what's been going on in the NBA?
We could get to some predictions.
All right, let's do it. Well, you know, you say that the Lakers are obviously one of potentially the best teams in the NBA. I think people think that Lakers and Thunder are kind of 1 and 1A in the West, but they definitely have some depth with elite teams. Meanwhile, the East, with the departure of Dwight Howard, and the aging of the Celtics, Ray Allen actually leaving to the Heat. It makes it a little less wide open in the East, but how do you see it shaking out, Asa?
Well, I mean, there's no way for me to pick against the Heat at this point. You know, I mean, when you see the level that LeBron's playing at, and you know, I read some of Bill Simmons just absolute gushing over LeBron. But I feel like I fear that it's true. You know, I fear that he actually is going to be even better this year because of what he figured out in the playoffs of how dominant he can be in the deep, low post. And, you know, I mean, he's not going to have to grind it out there every night of the regular season, but he's just so much more crazy efficient down there. You know, he could average a triple-double. You know, we could see that. We could totally see that. And then Wade, you know, probably more healthy this year. He didn't play in the Olympics. He got to rest in the off season, you know, and he's coming back. You know, LeBron's been the man. Maybe he wants to prove something. I mean, this team is scary, and adding Ray Allen to that mix, I mean, Jesus Christ. I don't see anybody taking them down. But I guess we should talk about who is a crazy lottery ticket that could potentially get in there. Or
yeah.
Do you have a...
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I think that the Heat are going to have it. And I hope for LeBron's sake that we're right, because he promised not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, not six, not seven, but maybe more. Yeah, in terms of wild cards, I mean, I guess I should stay away from picking the Lakers or the Thunder. They're the two powerhouses of the West. People see them as most likely to get to the finals. So obviously they would be there, you know, to compete with the Heat for a championship. But I'm gonna dig a little deeper. You know, there's, you know, only 2 years ago, people forget the Dallas Mavericks won the title, but they've seen a tremendous amount of turnover. That roster to me looks a little bit janky. I think that Mark Cuban got a little bit cocky with free agents, Right now you're looking at Darren Collison, OJ Mayo, Sean Marion, Brandon Wright, and Elton Brand with Dirk Nowitzki injured. So, you know, a little bit of a janky lineup. I think they're going to be out of the running. I don't know if the Clippers are quite there, though I am rooting for Chris Paul because he's on my fantasy team. I think that Memphis, a team that made it to the Western Conference Finals 2 years ago, if they can get Zach Randolph back, they're going to have Zach Randolph and Marc Gasol, who had a fantastic year last year down low. Maybe they can compete with the L.A. Lakers and bang down low. They can really, really play some defense. Their only problem is their ability to shoot the ball from the outside. They tried to do a little bit to address that in the offseason, but a healthy Rudy Gay and a healthy Zach Randolph makes this a very dangerous defensive team. And if I have to pick a dark horse outside of the top three teams, I think Memphis might fit that criteria for me.
They do look really appealing, especially, you know, with Marc Gasol. He can really guard the rim. He's really a presence in there. Well, I'm going to dig a little deeper even, dig a little deeper back into the pages of history. And I'm going to say the San Antonio Spurs have one more run to the finals as my team that could take down the Lakers. This is a team that's beaten the Lakers in the past. They know what it takes. Their old guys are, you know, they're aging gracefully. Let's be real. I mean, Tim Duncan doesn't have to play as big a minutes anymore. But Tony Parker, everybody agreed that he was as good as he's ever been in his career last year. You know, you got to think that he will continue that. He's just got so much depth. They got such a great system there, and they bring over their international players. Mando DiColo over there this year. Another year of Kawhi Leonard, who developed into a guy who looked like he could really be a star. You know, I like the wily San Antonio Spurs to give L.A. a run for their money, and why not?
Yeah, that's a good pick. I like it. People have been really talking up Kawhi Leonard and saying that, you know, he's the consummate Spur if it's really well into that system. And they brought in a number of other guys. I think Captain Jack, Steven Jackson, will provide some much-needed offense off the bench. Boris Diaz, a very versatile guy that can play center for them. They do a really good job of plugging and playing in a number of different positions, a really good job of scouting, like you said, bringing over guys from Europe. I like that pick. I think, you know, them, just like, you know, some people might be touting the Celtics in the East, if they can be healthy at the end of the year and Pop is really good at managing those minutes for his guys, then they will be a force come playoff time. So I think that's a good pick. Let's move on to another debate that a lot of people think is already foreseen, as LeBron has been dominating the league, but MVP. You know, there's a lot of candidates out there, a lot of guys that are superstars in this league, but who do you think is your MVP in our extremely preliminary predictions?
Okay. Well, I don't want to pick LeBron because I don't. And I think there's a good chance that he'll win it. But I think there's a decent chance that someone else will win it because he's been winning it. And I like Kevin Durant. I think, you know, a Harden trade, I don't know if that helps it or it hurts it. I was trying to think about that and analyze it. I mean, I'd like Durant before that happened. But maybe it helps him a little bit because he actually might get more stats, which, you know, could help in the end, you know, if he's got a real huge lead in scoring, even if LeBron's got better numbers elsewhere.
Right.
You know, but I like him as kind of a comeback year, not comeback, but, you know, they got close. Like you said, they weren't close in the finals, but they got as far as you could get without winning an NBA championship. And they're so young, but they're so hungry. They both won the gold medal. That took a real effort. That took a real thing. And
that's true. And they were able to learn from guys like LeBron and Kobe while they were there. I think that probably definitely had to help shape them.
Yeah. And LeBron and Wade both talked about how that, the, you know, playing in the Olympic team in years past helped them, you know, even when the Olympic team wasn't necessarily winning gold. So I like Durant. I just think he, you know, is even better. Maybe he'll be like a little bit stronger as he gets a year older, which could help him, you know, as he gets, away, you know, he can get to a point where he doesn't have to throw his body around to a crazy degree. Like, he still will do it whenever he wants, but, you know, can settle into some crazy Dirk Nowitzki-esque post-game shots. Like, I can't even imagine what Kevin Durant will be after, like, 6 or 8 more years of him developing his game. Like, I'm so excited. This is, like, what is he, 4 or 5 years in the league? I mean, I guess it's a little while now, but, you know,
yeah, he's going to be, like, shooting horse shots on the court, just, like, crazy janky stuff. He's got so many limbs he can shoot from just about any angle. I love KD as an MVP pick, and I think that he's definitely going to have to shoulder the load, so he's going to have an opportunity to put up the MVP numbers. The guy that I'm going with, I'm not going with LeBron either. I'm going with Chris Paul, CP3 Chains. He's had, you know, he excelled last year with his very talented teammates without really an offseason to adjust. Now he has had all of last season, playoffs, and a preseason. I think this is when Lob City gets off the ground. So I think Chris Paul, you know, harkens back to Steve Nash. Point guard wins the MVP. He's going to put up, you know, incredible defensive numbers, gets lots of steals. Very, very pesky guy. And he's going to be very scary for opposing defenses.
This Halloween episode has been terrifying. I don't know about you. I'm sitting here in my room just quaking and shaking. It might be all the sugar that I'm just, like, shorting out, but I don't know. I like Paul there. Like you said, last season, averaged 9 assists. He's better than that. He does better than that. Bet he, you know, is up in the 11-12 range. And he can take over the game at this point in his career, at the end of the game, when they need that. And it's so valuable to have the guy bringing the ball up be the one who can take those ISOs, just so you don't have to even F with, like, passing. You know, wide shoot. And he can get into it. He can pull up. He's got a great three-point shot now. I mean, I'd love to see that. You like to see point guard when it feels right somehow.
Yeah, he certainly got a lot of guys to take the pressure off. You know, Jamal Crawford can stroke it from outside. Blake Griffin and Caron Butler at the forward positions, and big old DeAndre Jordan down low. So I'm certainly rooting for him.
Yeah, they're a lot of fun to watch. And living out here on the West Coast now, I watch more West Coast basketball because of the timing when it's on. And I got to confess, I love the Hawks are always fun to watch. I love the Hawks, no doubt. But the West Coast teams are a lot of fun to watch. The Clippers, even the Warriors, the Blazers, obviously the Lakers this year. You know, and the Kings are kind of a fun team to watch now, too. So coming up.
The Jimmer!
With the Clippers, the Jimmer. Is he their, like, seventh man extraordinaire?
I think he's the mascot third. Now.
Oh, that's good.
That's Sacramento Jimmers.
You can handle that. Well, let's talk about Rookie of the Year, because we're predicting everything except Coach of the Year, because we don't care.
It'll be whoever has the best record, because that's usually how.
Yeah, nobody coaches in the NBA anyway. They just manage egos. I'm going to start. My Rookie of the Year pick is Dion Waiters. And I'm going on gut. I'm going on what I saw yesterday and gut and the fact that he's a starting shooting guard and the fact that I like Cleveland. So I'm going on a couple things, I guess. And I just like what he brings to the table. I mean, him and Kyrie in that backcourt, that's a lot to handle. They can both get to the rack. They can both shoot from outside. Waiters, maybe not as much of a three-point shooter. But, you know, he's going to get chances. He's going to get a lot of shot opportunities, even sharing that ball. Not a lot of scores beyond those guys in that backcourt necessarily. You know, so I like him to put up, heck, close to 20 a game. He's shown he can play good defense, get some steals, get out on the break. I think he could put up 20. Not a ton of other stats, but, you know, if the Cavs make a run, he could be a guy that could have consideration.
Yeah, he put up, 17 last night?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Well, in the draft, one of the things we debated was Marcus Kidd-Gilchrist or Brad Beal. Here, I'm going to go with Brad Beal on draft day. I went with Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. I wanted to put Anthony Davis, but that's the popular pick. But he did look tremendous. I watched the first part of the Hornets game. They were getting killed by your Spurs, but, I mean, he was hitting outside jumpers looking great. But Bradley Beal is going to have, I think, an opportunity to thrive in Washington. There's a lot of young talent, but he is a tremendous scorer. He's a big guy. He's going to be, you know, prominently featured in the rotation. And I really like, you know, as a guard, his ability to create his own shot. I think that he's going to thrive in Washington. I'm giving it to Bradley Beal. He's going to get a lot of looks on an awful team. Bradley Beal, one of the top picks in the draft. I think he's going to have a big impact in Washington.
Is he a lefty? I think he has a lefty stroke, doesn't he?
Lefty stroke.
Yeah, like that. I heard people are calling him Bradley, don't call me Ace of Beal because of my fame.
Is he the name on the back? They're like, Beal, Ace of Beal?
Yeah. They're like, you related? I don't know why they asked him like that. Their voice went up at the end. That's how you ask questions. Your voice goes up.
Yeah. You're excited. That's how you ask him?
It is excited. And I just thought...
Or if you're scared.
You're scared and spooky.
Whoa.
And you get very defensive when you're scared, like the defensive player of the year. And... this one, like, is kind of silly to even pick, but I just thought, like, maybe if KD wins the MVP, they'll give this to LeBron because they'll feel bad for not giving him the MVP, and they know his feelings will be hurt. So it'll be a nice other thing to add to his mantelpiece.
I like it. I'll predict Dwight Howard. He's won it a few times before, and seeing as he's in L.A. now, I think that he's in a big enough market to win plenty of awards.
Yeah. That's definitely going to happen. Well, those are the awards. Those are, you know, stuffy picks. We know the superstars. The thing about the NBA, not a lot changes. It's, you know, the top is the top. Guys that are good rarely fall off much. Guys rarely come out of nowhere like Jeremy Lin. That's why that story is so incredible. But let's pick some more off the map things. So the first category we're going to do is called Lottery to the Playoffs, ? So, Travis, who will be your Lottery to the Playoffs team?
I tell you who I'd love to pick. I'd love to pick the whitest team in the NBA, the Minnesota Timberwolves, as they were recently called. But you know what? The injuries to Kevin Love, the injuries to Ricky Rubio, I just can't do it. I love that they've added AK-47. I love that they added Brandon Roy. I'm rooting for him to come back. But you know what? I'm going to have to go with Cleveland. I believe in young Kyrie Irving. I think Kyrie is Irie. And, you know, they have another lottery pick from 2011, Tristan Thompson, young man out of Texas, who had a pretty good rookie campaign. I think he's going to improve on that. Anderson Varejão, as he showed last night, getting a ton of rebounds. He's a pretty solid big man. There aren't a lot of big men in this league, and I love the pickup of Tyler Zeller. He's a guy who obviously excelled at UNC, candidate for player of the year. He's about 6'11", 7 feet tall, and he's very skilled. I think he's a good pickup for them. Also, they have your boy Deion Waiters. 17 points last night. He hit 2 threes. He had 3 steals. They have a lot of different young parts, but in the East, it's a little bit easier to get to the playoffs, so I could see them sneaking in with, you know, maybe a 500 record, a little bit below, a little bit above. But I think that the Cleveland Cavaliers could make that jump to maybe being, you know, a lottery team to a playoff team.
You know, I like that. You know, that my heart at first, I thought Cleveland. And Kyrie, if he makes the jump, so many people are touting him as the guy who's going to make what some people call the leap, as in he goes from really good player to elite player, which would be so quick. It's incredible how fast he has come up, you know,
what did he play, like 6 games at Duke?
In college, yeah. Crazy. Yeah. You know, now is up, rookie of the year. So expectations so high. You know, I like that, though. But I went to the west side, I went with the Golden State Warriors. Now, my pick is very spooky and scary because it involves bones and guts and skin and and injuries is what is involved. And this team has a lot of potential, but this team better have some damn good doctors, because if your cornerstones are Steph Curry and Andrew Bogut, you really got to work.
Most of the time they look like mummies because of all the gauze.
Oh, the gauze! But assuming that they both can play the majority of the season, I'm not asking for 82 games. I'm asking for like 70, okay? 70 from each of them or some combination. I think that this team can make moves. Curry is incredible. He is a really good point guard. I mean, people think of him as such a good shooter, and he is. He's an unreal shooter, and he has a stroke that, dude, I mean, it might be the prettiest in basketball after Ray Allen retires. It really might. But he has abilities as a point guard. He can get the ball in. He's a little turnover prone, needs to work on that, but he can really get fit passes into big men down low, really creative with the ball. Isn't great at getting into the lane, but with a jumper like that in the pick and roll game, just stepping out, I mean, he's deadly. He really is deadly. And if Bogut is in there, Bogut does, you know, he's not at all Dwight Howard, but he does a similar thing that Dwight Howard does, and he covers defensive really struggles from Curry and from other guys on that team, because he can be a shot blocker in the middle, and he can cover that lane and protect the rim, because Steph Curry is a little man. He's getting run off picks and probably knocked to the ground. Like, you need someone back there. David Lee, I guess, is their starting power forward, and he's kind of good on offense, but he can't play defense with a lick. So Bogut needs to come in and just use all of his energy on defense. But if he does that, I think they could be good, because David Lee can score. And the other guy I want to talk to you about is Klay Thompson, man. He could be really good. So he started off the season on the bench, didn't get many minutes. But by the end of the year, he was starting, playing 30, 33 minutes a game, and really cranked it up when he started starting. In the last month of the season, he averaged 19 points, 4 boards, and 3 assists, which are really nice numbers, considering how young he is and how quickly he's come along. Another year, he'll definitely be starting this year. If those points can continue to go up, he's just got such a sweet stroke. Him and Curry both on that perimeter, they can put up points in bunches. And I haven't even talked about Harrison Barnes, one of the best offensive players in college basketball last year, that now, is a guy who can come in at small forward for them. So they got some depth, not going to be great on defense, but if Bogut can stay healthy, he can provide enough defense, and they can just outscore you.
Yeah, definitely a fun team. They would be like a great video game team. I feel like so many like different talented offensive pieces. Hoping that they stay healthy. Well, what about the flip side? What about in terms of a team that maybe made the playoffs last year but is looking to kind of fall off the map this year, maybe slip into the lottery, maybe looking to rebuild, or maybe just having a disappointing year?
Okay. Well, I'm going to go out on a limb. There was one that seemed kind of obvious, but I'm going to go out on a limb.
You want me to hit the obvious one first?
Sure, if you want.
All right, let's get the obvious one out of the way, because I think most people saw this one coming. I like your pick, so we can build on that one. It's got to be Orlando in the East. The sixth seed from last year. This was a team that made the playoffs, but they're missing their best player, who masked a lot of their deficiencies. That a guy who's that good defensively down low, maybe your guards let somebody through. He's there to guard the rim. So I don't think that Team Redick, with Jameer Nelson, will be able to hold down the fort. They'll be a pesky team, but I don't think that they're going to be a playoff team despite the disappointment in the East. So now let's get down to the hot topic. Let's get down to who you're picking to go to playoffs to lottery this year.
Okay. Quick tangent. I have Big Baby on my fantasy team, and I'm actually kind of excited because I think they're going to suck, but somebody has to get stats. People get rebounds off of free throws. I mean, he'll get them somehow. Just starting power fat guy or whatever he is.
It's true. It's scary how big of a baby he is.
It is terrifying. He's like
scary.
Like the Mississippi or no, LSU. Damn, I fucked that up. Anyway, I'm gonna get to my pick and I'm gonna ruffle some feathers up in the tri-state area and God bless, but they can't be kept safe from the ineptness of the New York Knicks front office and their general roster construction. And so I think the Knicks, who made the playoffs last year, have a chance to miss the playoffs this year. Like we said, not a lot changes in the NBA, but I think not a lot has to change here. I think things are trending this way anyway. We just heard that Amari Stoudemire is going to miss about 2 months with knee surgery. So who knows, you know, if that'll be the extent of it or if there'll be a more extended rehab. I think that could actually help. That period might actually help because on offense they can gel a little bit. There'll be room for Carmelo to operate. It's when Amari comes back I'm more worried about. He comes back. They haven't been able to share the rock ever. Melo and him have not ever been able to share the rock. Why are they going to share it now? Raymond Felton might be decent. I just don't see that happening, you know, and I don't know if I believe in Melo, man. He's been in positions to win series. His playoff record is horrible. He puts up points, but he doesn't really show up for the big games like a guy who's going to lead that team. So I don't know. And you know, by the way, Brooklyn coming up and really getting a lot of the spotlight this year. Maybe I think that gives them some momentum. Maybe to leapfrog the Knicks a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? I mean, I kind of like that pick. The Knicks really don't have as many pieces as you think that they do. And, you know, with Lynn leaving, it did leave a hole at the point guard position. They filled it with Felton and Jason Kidd. But Felton is not an elite player, so it really is just Carmelo Anthony. Tyson Chandler is, you know, a nice player. He's a great defensive player in the middle at center, but, you know, Chris Paul kind of made him offensively in the past when he had the best offensive years. And then, you know, Kurt Thomas stepping in and, you know, the ancient Rasheed Wallace. I respect the Sheed. I love the Sheed, but I just don't know if that's getting it done for the New York Knicks. So I like them to fall off. Oh, good predictions. I think that despite how spooky everything was, we navigated our way through that pretty well.
Yeah, we did. There was smoke and there were mirrors, but
there was plenty of smoke.
We found our way.
Yeah,
we absolutely found our way.
Well, what say you? We get to America's.
Let's skin a pig. Ha 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 ha.
I be on it all night, man. I be on it all day. Straight up pimp. If you want me, you can find me in the air. I'm on it. I'm on it. I'm on it. It's just the way it goes. I be on that shit that I had you on that. I don't want
about
no
territory.
This time I need all my freak show. Get down on the floor. If you came to rep your set, right, that's how to let them know. If it's jail, I keep a stop on the
head. How's it going? Of course, just as it has been for weeks and weeks now. Carson spots our NFL analyst. Former center for the Colby Mules. Carson, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. Colby Mules, on the other hand, not doing so hot. We saw them lose the first leg of the Colby Bates Bowden trifecta down in Lewiston this week. But to make me feel better, we can talk about some NFL football, get my mind off of my boys up in Waterville.
Our NFL analyst, the resume is deep, but the voice is deeper. And we usually start with Thursday night matchup. I'm tempted to not even do it, but let's keep with tradition. Let's not spend a lot of time, though. So the Thursday night game, there's way too many Thursday night games. Why do we do this, NFL? Chiefs at Chargers. I mean, gross. Just gross. Nobody wants to watch these Chiefs play. I don't know, guys. Is there any interest in this game to you?
You know, I see you make a good point, and I think that a lot of these games are picked at the beginning of the season. I think part of it is availability, and the other part of it is just that, you know, who knows, maybe one of these two teams could be a playoff contender by this point. Maybe both are, but like you said, this game doesn't have too much to offer.
I wish Brady Quinn was playing so I could look at his beautiful man face.
That would be one reason to tune in for both male and female viewers. But I would say one thing to look for is just the Chargers, you know, continuing that tradition of being underachievers. You know, two big games this year against the Broncos and the Saints. They've had considerable leads just to squander at the end of the game. A lot of talent, but I just hate the way they play. But, you know, I think they'll get it done against the Kansas City team that's just struggled to stop anybody on defense. And, you know, they have, you know, two pretty beat-up quarterbacks going into the game. So look for you know, the Chargers to get a win in not very affirmative fashion.
Well,
affirmative action?
Affirmative fashion, affirmative action, same exact thing.
We normally make picks for this game, but because I feel like we all have a feeling that the Chiefs are just pretty terrible, let's pick against the line itself. Now, the line on this game is Chargers are favored by 9 points. Gentlemen, care to make your Thursday night picks with the line, Chargers 9 points.
With the line, I'm going to go ahead and say it's going to be the Chargers 24 to the Chiefs, we'll say 20. I think they'll cover, but it's going to be an ugly game. Look for the Chargers to get out early and squander a lead somehow. It seems to be the theme of the season so far for them.
Wait, you said they're winning 24-20?
Yeah.
Okay, so they're not covering.
So excuse me, not to cover. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. I think the Chargers are going to whoop them. I think the Chargers, they're not great, if you're right, but they do have talent, and I think they got to have some prep with that much talent. They got to. So I think they want to come out and put a whooping. That Chiefs defense has not been up to the task, especially against the pass, and the Chargers are going to throw it all over them. Rivers has been ugly. You know, he is ugly, but he hasn't played ugly. We're just being honest.
A great person, though.
Maybe we underestimated the value of Vincent Jackson. You know, he's still got Malcolm Floyd, who can stretch the field, but Vincent Jackson could just run a deep route every single throw, and he had the option of just chucking it with his ugly delivery. But, you know, I like them to do work, and I would like Antonio Gates to have more than 2 catches 1 week for my fantasy. That'd be super, Antonio. You know, your child is in my father's class last year. And
Wow.
He didn't fail her.
Wow. So, well, send Antonio that text. Let him know.
Antonio.
Well, I guess I should make my pick. I'm going to have to go with our NFL analyst here. I don't think that the Chargers are going to cover. AFC West, not necessarily the AFC best. I think that we're looking at let's call it 28-21. I'm going to say that they get close to covering that spread, but don't necessarily do it. But certainly two disappointing squads, as a lot of people were actually touting the Chiefs to come out of that division with the uncertainty surrounding Peyton Manning.
You guys are going to watch instead of watching NFL football on Thursday? For the listeners to give them some sort of guidance in their TV watching on Thursday?
Well, to give them guidance for things to do besides watching the NFL on Thursday.
Yeah, any programs you guys look into, maybe History Channel might have a special on that you guys want
to check out. I mean, well, Thursday night is the best night for TV. I mean, tune into the league, guys, on FX. It's great. It's better than shitty football because it's about football, but it's good. So it's an improvement. They'll probably have the game on in the show. So you're watching both. So tune into that. Take a look at Parks and Rec. It's always fun.
Awesome. Great stuff.
I'm going to say, since I said they are covering, going on a limb here, I think they're going to put up some points, too. I'm going to say 31-20 Chargers.
Wow.
Nice.
So just barely.
Yeah. Good thing not putting money on this one, which we can never do because it's illegal. I guess I could drive to Reno. Well, that game sucks. let's talk about the Dirty Birds.
Birds.
Let's
Birds.
Do it. Last undefeated team in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, I'm sure you guys all watched the game last week. Got a pretty convincing win over the Eagles. Watching the game was kind of awesome. But in the other point, you know, I watched the game. I finished it. And I felt like I just came home from work. You know, I went in, you know, did my job, came home, and, you know, what's next? I think the Falcons took the same sort of attitude. You know, have a trip to Philadelphia. It's going to be a business trip. Get in, get out. Played a very clean ball game. Matt Ryan with a very clean line. He ended up with 3 touchdowns, no picks. You know, threw for over 200 yards. And threw for accuracy, throwing over 75%, completing over 70%, of his passes. So I think that, you know, the Eagles have some work to do with a new D coordinator. You know, didn't really look on the same page the entire time.
Scored on the first 6 drives of the game, I think.
First 6 drives, controlled the time of possession just like crazy. It was the old school Falcons drive. I commented to Travis when we were watching that they just, you know, used a run to set up the pass. We also scored big plays. You know, Julio's fade was just an awesome ball, an awesome decision, you know, for that touchdown. But very business, like I'd say, more than anything for the Falcons. You know, not too much emotion really in the game because they controlled it from the you know, the opening to the last whistle.
Yeah, it feels good to do that. But it's a little weird not to be excited about 7-0, you know?
Definitely. And actually, I was reading an article today that was pretty awesome. You know, Roddy White came out saying that, you know, all these questions about how does it feel to be undefeated for the first time in so long, you know, how do you guys feel? And Roddy White understands, you know, the criticisms that this team has and what the critics think about this Atlanta team. And, you know, he said that, you know, until we can finish, you know, in the playoffs strong, You know, we're just considering, you know, we're just considered as regular season warriors, he said, which is absolutely awesome that he, you know, they have that in mind, that, you know, the regular season is awesome for propelling the team to the playoffs. But, you know, what's important essentially is doing well in the playoffs. And I love that they have that mindset. They're not getting caught up with trying to have a perfect season, but you know, rather doing what's necessary now to be able to have success in the playoffs.
Yeah, I totally agree. But can I posit one thing to you?
Yeah.
So given that, and we know that's what we're focused on, but you still, I mean, why not win every game in the regular season? You're still trying to do that. Obviously, you're not dwelling on that, as you said, I wouldn't think. But we do have a pretty easy schedule the rest of the way out. We have one game against the Giants, which is a big game because that's someone we could potentially face in the playoffs. So that's a game you want to win. So, you know, real good chance to go close to undefeated, if not undefeated, I think. Although, you know, a lot of people think we'll lose before then just because that happens and, you know, any given Sunday, as they say. But let me posit to you this. If the Falcons somehow go 16-0, if that happens, has there ever been a team that will, or, you know, has there ever been a team that was 16-0 that had less of, you know, that instilled less fear than the Falcons team, I guess, in the eyes of, you know, the media at least? I mean,
I'm going to say absolutely not. I mean, the thing about the Falcons is the past few years, they floundered in the playoffs. Now, let me tell you what the Falcons schedule is coming up through the rest of the year. This week, we're playing the Cowboys, who have been struggling as of late. So I think we should win that game. We'll go at the Saints, who have been terrible this year. Then versus the Cardinals, who are in free fall. The Bucks, who are pesky, but definitely have more talent. The Saints the next week. The Panthers the next week. Next real test comes against the Giants on December 16th. And then after that, it's Lions-Bucks. There's definitely a chance we could run the table from here on out. But, you know, it is the NFL. Every game is extremely difficult. Even beating the Raiders a few weeks ago proved to be a task in and of itself. So I think that if we do go undefeated, it would be unjust to not treat them with the utmost respect.
Yeah, and I mean, even, you know, going into a game against Philadelphia, the Falcons, you know, obviously undefeated going into the game. A majority of the analysts that I saw on TV picked Philadelphia to win. And it has a lot to do with market, the hype. You know, Michael Vick came back to the league. You know, as a pretty exciting, electrifying guy. You know, who had success his first couple of years as a starter. You know, back to Philadelphia now. You know, not doing as much to help his team. But I mean, the Falcons' schedule. I think if we do slip up, it's going to be an NFC South game. It's going to be a game because those are always a hard thing. There's a lot of emotion that goes into these games. You know, playing the Saints, you know, in New Orleans, you know, is going to be a tough game, frankly. And I think that when you get down to that division schedule, you know, that's how, you know, I think the Falcons might slip up if we do. And, you know, and looking forward to the Cowboys games. I've seen the Cowboys play some, and I think, again, this week, there will be a number of people who will pick the Cowboys against the Falcons. But, I mean, just being candid, and I hope I don't jinx them, but I think that we can thump the Cowboys. I think that we can impose, you know, our style of play both on offense and defense on the Cowboys. I've seen them play on multiple occasions, and they've done very little to impress me. I think especially if Tony Romo's throwing the ball up and, you know, turning the ball over like he has been the past couple of weeks, you know, we can really use that to our advantage, control the tempo and pace of the game, and, you know, and take care of business.
Yeah, I think DeMarco Murray's not starting either, which means, you know, Fragile Felix is in the backfield, and, yeah, I think we'll be able to take control of that game. Maybe they'll just keep picking against us each week, and that will be ideal, and then we'll just keep winning. You know, but maybe it's good to lose one game at some point. You know, it'd be really effing cool to go undefeated. But maybe it is good to lose one game. I don't know.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't want to put more pressure on this team. I mean, I like that everyone has the mentality that they have right now that, you know, the regular season is what it is, but we need to win in the playoffs. But until we see them win in the playoffs, I'd kind of like as little pressure as possible, honestly.
Yeah.
That's just me, cautious Atlanta sports fan.
Absolutely. I want to get a quote that I had from Herm Edwards real quick about the Falcons game against the Eagles. And it was just great.
Yeah. I love this.
He's great. Okay. So I'm not going to do, can anybody do a Herm Edwards impression? Cause that would be better.
I don't trust myself to do that.
Okay. Well, you know, in the interest of being politically correct, I'll just read it. So he's talking about, you know, he was asked, you know, whether the Falcons have elevated their game, you know, and you know, are really playing like this undefeated team. He's like, what they did in Philly, man, here's the number. Here's what's impressive to me. Andy Reid is 13-0 coming off byes. They go into Philly, their first six possessions, they score. You know what that is? That's like a man coming in your house, opening your refrigerator and saying, man, what we got to eat tonight? Just walk in your house. Check out your food. Says, I'm going to have a steak, by the way. That's what it is. I couldn't help myself. So we came into the Lincoln Field in Philadelphia and just took their lunch. And, you know, we know they were adjusting, new D coordinator, but, you know, that's the dynasty team. You know, it's a lot to come in and take the lunch of a dynasty team. So, you know, I apologize to everyone out there. I just couldn't help
it. I actually hadn't heard that till now. And saying that, just, you know, put Herm Edwards right in my head. And you know, I could see him saying those exact words. That was an awesome impression. But, yeah, like you said, never really felt too tested, you know, during that game. And, you know, I love the business-like attitude. And hopefully we can take that approach each and every week from here on out. And, you know, if we do slip up, you know, it is what it is, but, you know, as long as we're, you know, preparing every single game to the best of our ability and looking forward towards the playoffs, you know, I think we'll be just fine.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm excited to see how it progresses, and I'm sure that we can take it week by week. There's plenty of Falcons stuff to break down, and there's plenty of Falcons stuff to go on moving forward. And I think that you're right, Carson, after this week, we will be 8-0, and we'll get continue farther. But how do you guys feel about moving on to our picks of the week? I know that betting is illegal in the United States, but if you guys, well, not obviously Reno or whatever, but, you know, if you guys do find a way to perhaps do it, listen to our picks. We're on the money. week after week, giving you winners.
There's websites, guys. Just find them.
Yeah, they're out there. Sportsmonies.com. I'm sure that's one of them. Footballbets.biz.
Cashandballs.org.
Cashandballs.org.
I think it's actually .gov, but you know, off of that, Travis, if you took my pick from last week, I'm going to apologize to you, frankly. I picked RG3 to get the W over Pittsburgh, at Pittsburgh, you know, wearing those hideous uniforms. Pittsburgh got a spark from there.
Those were scary bad.
Those were very spooky uniforms.
Scary bees.
Pittsburgh got, you know, a big lift from their defense and their special teams. And, you know, they are in my game of the week again this week as they take on the Giants, a team that Asa picked to have a lot of success so far this season. Started off a little shaky, but they've gotten it together the past couple weeks. You know, I didn't expect them to get off to the start that they got off to. But, you know, right now they're sitting pretty, you know, looking into week 8, which is not very characteristic of a Tom Coughlin coach team. But, however, I think that they thrive so far. And if you look at last week against the Cowboys, taking the ball away, you know, forcing teams into making bad mistakes, and then controlling the ball on the offensive side, using the run game, having Eli, you know, make pretty simple reads, and, you know, having him control the game from that end. Looking at Pittsburgh, I think that they have a pretty stout run defense. I think that they'll do a lot to stop New York's run defense, and, you know, hence their ability to control the pace and tempo of the game. And Ben Roethlisberger has been phenomenal the past couple games. You know, throwing 14 TDs, only 3 picks. I think that he'll control the ball, you know, limit the turnovers. And I think that Pittsburgh will establish the running game, control the tempo, use New York's game plan, and ultimately win the game. I'm going to go with the final score of 24-17.
Nice. I like it. A classic matchup of two teams that are definitely headliners in the NFL. I'm going to go with two teams that unexpectedly find themselves in the race in the NFC to make in the AFC to make the playoffs. There's such parity in this league this year, so many 500 teams, and two teams that, you know, you didn't necessarily think would find themselves in this position at 4-3 at this point in this season. I'm talking, of course, about the Indianapolis Colts and the Miami Dolphins, or as I like to call it, the Reggie Bushes versus the Indiana Lux. You know what? These teams, you know, if they can move to 5-3, can move to a nice position in the AFC. Miami is primarily here because of their defense. Cameron Wake and company have been leading a very rock-solid defense. He has a ton of sacks, and that's been able to keep them in the game. They have a good rushing attack with my boy and Nick Gibson's boy, Reggie Bush, leading the way.
Right.
And you know what? Tannehill might be out this week. But Matt Moore has been a guy over the past few years has given them solid quarterback play. We all have a hard-on for Brian Hartline, and Devon Best will be the best this week. So I think that, you know, with all the puns that are on their side and the fact that the Indianapolis Colts have been a good story up to this point, but I don't think that Andy – I'm sorry – I don't think that Lux can be able to get it done this week against the Miami defense. Look for the Dolphins to take down the Colts. I'm going to say 21-16.
Ooh, some close games. Hey, forgetting me. Yeah, man.
The Hard Knocks reverse curse. I'd like it. Riding the wave. And hey, what if Miami's a playoff team? That'd be hilarious. Well, last week I was rewarded by picking the Falcons, but you can't do that too many weeks or it's bad karma because it's, you know, such a slam dunk pick. So I picked an interesting game. I picked the game in Cincinnati this week. Denver comes into Cincinnati. Denver's favored by, I think, 4 points in this game, road favorite. Cincinnati sits at 3-4. They're kind of a team on the rise. In the last couple of years, they've been good in that division. They've been able to take down their divisional opponents. Haven't had a ton of success beyond that, none at all in the playoffs. But developing a young offensive core, bringing in the law firm for a little bit of running, AJ Green has just been on an incredible trajectory. I mean, he went from stud in college to a rookie in the NFL to superstar this year and in 3 years, and it's really happened. He really is that good. And maybe Dandy Andy Dalton isn't that good, but AJ Green makes him look good. Either way, Dandy Andy is rocking an 80 quarterback rating in his second year, telling that sophomore slump to suck itself. Plus, they lead the NFL in sack rate, the Cincinnati defense. That's all well and good, but we're talking about Peyton Manning here, and the dude is on a mission. He's back, as I knew he would be, as I drafted him in two of my three fantasy leagues. In our league, I have him and RG3. Wow. Embarrassment of riches. Look it up in the dictionary, and you'll see my face. So, Peyton Manning right now is on such a tear. He's now leading the league in quarterback rating. He's at like 107. He's dropping dimes. He hasn't thrown an interception since his last birthday. And he's just feeling it. They had that incredible comeback against the Chargers, although you got to attribute a lot of that to the horrible nature of the Chargers in every way. But then, you know, came out against New Orleans, took care of business as you'd expect him to. He hit Peyton Manning, just getting 138 quarterback rating in the game. Putting a lot of stock in quarterback rating. I don't usually put that much stock in it. But I think they're just going to come out and take Cincinnati to the cleaners. You know, Denver's got a pretty good defense, too. They haven't got as much credit this year. They haven't been as good this year, but I think they have the potential to be better. We saw last year, give a lot of credit to Tebow, but that defense also carried them. You know, if they looked down, there were two pairs of feet in the sand, you know, whatever. One of them was the defense, not Jesus. But anyway, getting away from religion to my pick, I think Denver's going to come in there and put up a bundle. I like Denver to put up 29, and I think they're going to win fairly handily. So I'm going to say 29-23. Not super handily.
Okay.
Cover. It's a good team. It'll probably be a close game.
Yeah. Covering the spread, though.
Ah, once again, good picks. And, guys, that it got scary there.
Spooky.
First Halloween episode of Faltori, smashing success.
Faltori.
Faltori. I love going over. It's more fun because that bitch stops talking.
She's trying to cut us off.
Yeah, I know.
All right. You guys have been listening to Foul Territory on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you very much for spending your Wednesday night with us, and we will see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.